Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining me from Las Vegas, Nevada, where he's still covering the Summer League, is Tim Montemps.
By the time you're listening to this, I'll be back in the world's greatest city. I'm quite happy.
Well, where is that? Akron,
it's
Ohio?
It's not Omaha. It's not Omaha and it's not Akron, boss. It's,
how dare you?
It's New York, New York City. Could include a bleep in there if I wanted, but New York City.
From the greatest city in North Texas, happy to be paroled from Las Vegas and Salt Lake Summer Leagues, it's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Is that my theme song?
Just don't sing it again, please. We got enough of that the other day.
All right, we have breaking news. It's fortunate that we have breaking news at the start of a podcast in mid-July. Very rarely
play
can
the,
we talk
play
about
the klaxon,
news.
Jackson. Play the klaxon.
ESPN breaking news.
Breaking news. LeBron James is not retiring.
Oh my gosh.
We're hanging on the edge of our seat.
Woo, pins and needles, baby. Wow. Woo. Whew.
I got that update from the ESPYs last night, and I almost fainted out of my chair. I was like, oh, man, I didn't know.
The thing about it is that LeBron was being, you know, mildly condescending when he said, lucky you, that day's not today. But having said that, it is lucky us, because when LeBron is gone, we're going to miss the hell out of him. So it is also actually lucky us. So, but having said that, while I admit that the entire NBA is fortunate and blessed that he's going to play year 21 and probably 22. He should deserve a rap across the knuckles for that little act that he, you know, played, you know, when they lost game four to the Nuggets. And like I said at the time, I'll respect that he was saying it because I don't know what he was doing, but it was difficult not to roll your eyes at the time. The guy just wasn't on the all NBA team, has 2 years and $100 million left on his contract, and has talked openly and seriously about playing with his son, which would not happen until 2024, 25 at the earliest. And I know he played through injuries and stuff, but he's always playing through injuries. So the Lakers certainly operated throughout the offseason like he was coming back. But, hey, listen, he said it on ESPN. He showed up for the ESPYs, which is terrific for him to do that. He accepted an award and said he was coming back. But at least we can – I mean, we haven't even talked about it for 6 weeks.
I mean, listen.
But hey, look, it's just a capper to the greatest offseason in the history of offseasons. LeBron James is back. Lock up the championship parade.
Rob Pelinka brought him back.
I mean, listen. He keeps on having the hits this summer. I mean, look, LeBron did this in after that series because they got swept, and it was a way to distract from that. And the rap on the knuckles should be for anybody who ever actually seriously considered the idea that he was not going to be playing next season. That's the extent of my commentary on that.
Well, to your point,
it's great LeBron is still playing because LeBron is hugely entertaining and still awesome, and let's have him stick around for a while.
LeBron absolutely earned the sarcastic mocking from Michael Malone after the championship when I believe it was on
the show.
Guys, I'm thinking about retiring. Yes, he absolutely earned that. And kind of the funniest thing about this story was people in the bronze orbit having to pretend like it was a serious story, right? Whether that's media folks, you know, Pelinka and Darvin Ham the next day at X Center, well, we hope he comes back. Like the guy was fresh off scoring 40 points playing basically, I think, all but 4 seconds, 48
all but four
minutes
seconds, yep.
in game four. I mean, it was the epitome of a silly storyline. Deflecting from getting swept, sure, whatever it was. And, you know, the thing about LeBron, he has been in the, not just national, international spotlight since, what was he, 16 when he was on the Sports Illustrated cover? 16, 17, whatever it was. And I think the worst thing that you can say about LeBron is he does tend to crave the spotlight. Like, what's the biggest mistake LeBron's ever made? The decision. Oh, okay. He announced where he was going to free agency with too much spotlight. You know, all things considered, whoop-de-damn-doo.
I'm in the camp that the decision has aged well. Maybe not the presentation of the broadcast, but the concept.
No, but I'm saying capital D, the decision. The platform, the way. If that's the biggest misstep of a guy's life in the spotlight, you know, he's going on almost a quarter century, like in the top spotlight of the world of athletics. then okay, big deal. And this is, you know, file this in the, hey, LeBron wanted to be the center of attention when it should have been, the spotlight should have been on the Denver Nuggets. Whoop-de-doo. Now, speaking of storylines that we're supposed to pretend like we're taking seriously, now that we know LeBron's not retiring, I guess it's time to really focus on Kyrie Irving trying to recruit LeBron to Dallas. Okay, crank up the trade machine. Let's figure out how can the Mavericks pull off this trade that LeBron apparently might be requesting if Kyrie's recruiting efforts are successful, and then get Rob Pelinka to agree to it. Hey, I was looking. I think we can go like it's tougher now that they dumped Davis Bertans' salary. Can we go like Hardaway? Got their JaVale McGee in there. Honestly,
that bring JaVale home. Bring JaVale home to LA. Continue the great offseason in LA.
Hey, I punched up something that I punched up something that would work from a salary standpoint, and obviously it's just like a totally ridiculous 4-for-1 deal that Rob Pelinka would have. Would not just hang up his foam, but throw it into the Pacific Ocean if this was seriously like brought to him. and the little like, how many wins does it add? How many does it subtract? It was plus 12 for the Mavericks, minus 11 for the Lakers. So good luck, Kyrie.
It's a 23-win trade.
Yeah. First, you got to convince LeBron, hey, leave that Western Conference Finals team down the street from where your son's going to be playing perhaps his only season of college basketball. You've got two more kids at home, you know, Hollywood and all that. And then get Pelinka to – but, hey, we're pretending to take absolutely ridiculous stories seriously, so let's focus on this now.
I also think he's in the process of building like a $100 million compound in Beverly Hills. Like he bought this – he bought another compound, and I don't remember. I'm not in the L.A. – I know there's – LA real estate junkies. I'm not one of them. It was owned by some well-known people, but it's this giant piece of land, you know, in Beverly Hills, which is obviously not cheap. He paid tens of millions of dollars for it. Then he tore everything. He's in the process of tearing everything on the property down and rebuilding it up. Who knows what's going to be on that property?
Right.
There might be, you know, an arena. I just saw a picture of Patrick Mahomes' mansion in Kansas City, and he has a golf like range and putting green and like a golf hole on his mansion. Who knows
he's what LeBron's going to put? The backyard's a top golf.
essentially, who knows what LeBron's going to have? What's on that lot? But he's building it to be in Los Angeles. You know, that's where he's going to be, and it's not going to be ready obviously this year.
Well, listen, we got there's land in Dallas. You might be able to build like a wave pool. Right, and make it pretend like you're at the beach. You know, import some sand.
I don't know if
you
swim in the ocean. I will say
this:
by the way,
not that I'm complaining, but Bontemps' face has disappeared. There it is. Oh, I liked it better the other way.
It, McMahon, I don't want to get too technical on you. What you're seeing is not what the viewer is going to see.
Oh, my bad. Okay,
just so you know.
Okay. All right.
We have software. We have new software here. That's
what are you trying to replace the IT department? You're not up for that, buddy.
No, I am not interested. I will say this: I do think that LeBron has a interest in playing with Kyrie Irving again. Mm-hmm. I think he likes the idea of playing with Kyrie, or the concept of playing with Kyrie and Anthony Davis. I have long said that the best big man pairing that LeBron's ever had in terms of pure fit is Anthony Davis. I believe the best guard pairing LeBron's ever had is Kyrie Irving. That would be an ideal pairing. But he was never
willing.
Now
I've got to figure out how to make the salaries match for LeBron and AD.
Well, that's right. It wouldn't be going to Dallas. It would have been coming to L.A.
Oh.
That was the way it was going to happen. Oh. But we have salary caps and stuff. That's, you know, they're in place so that Dallas can keep their talent and not every player in the league goes to the Lakers or the Knicks or the Heat where they want to go. And so the talent sharing, the NBA teams share revenue and they share talent. Although Dallas is a big market, it doesn't really need anything per se. Dallas kept its talented player because of the rules. Kyrie was unwilling to take less than market value. His market value was 3 years, $120 million. So the Lakers couldn't pay him that.
Incentives. And the other thing, though, is the Lakers did not make an attempt to create the kind of cap space to where they could have made a deal that it would have been very difficult. Really, probably impossible, although I don't have the numbers in front of me, for them to get to that level. But if, you know, if they would have let Hachimura go, if they would have moved Vanderbilt, which would have been very easy to do, if they would have not brought back D'Angelo Russell, they could have gotten ballpark-ish and at least given Kyrie a decision to make. The Lakers opted not to do that, despite the fact that LeBron lobbied for a trade before the deadline, you know, kind of complained about it not getting done after Kyrie ended up in Dallas. But you know, he didn't, that I'm aware of, do any kind of public lobbying after the playoffs.
No, he seemed like, you know, you're reading social media and trying to, you know, I don't know, but he seemed like he was supportive of the Lakers offseason.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that after, in the wake of the Russell Westbrook trade, where everybody ran away from it with their hands up, like, I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that. I do think LeBron has altered his status with, you know, using influence on the team building. I think he is, I think everybody was scarred from that one. And who knows exactly how that all went down, but I'm sure there's, everybody's going to have their own story.
Well, and the other thing is he has legitimate reason for optimism, like most competitive sweep in NBA history, but it was in the Western Conference Finals, right? They did make a deep playoff run. Austin Reeves is absolutely an ascending talent. You know, we can debate and or discuss whether Rui Hachimura's postseason was a flash in the pan or a sign of things to come. But if you're putting on purple and gold glasses, you can convince yourself, hey, that's a young player who's on the rise. I mean, there's reason to feel good about coming back to the Lakers following that playoff run.
That famous LeBron quote we've talked about before, after he lost, after they lost the two games to the Raptors in that one conference finals with the Cavs, and it was 2-2, and then they came back and won the next two games, 5 and 6, and he said, "I've been in a lot of adverse situations. This was not one of them. I've seen a lot of uncompetitive sweeps. That was not one of them."
Can we stop talking about this being an uncompetitive sweep? Who cares? They got swept. Like, yeah, I'm not trying to turn this into like Laker bashing, like, but
somebody said to me the other
day, competitive the sweep was is not worth our time.
I know, but hey, I've been horsewhipped on it.
You're a wicked witch, Bon Timms, riding the bronze broom. Stop it, man. Let just wave that bronze broom around. Let him.
Well, the other day, somebody asked me, like, who was a bigger threat with where they are now, or who was a bigger threat, the Suns or the Lakers, to the Nuggets? And I was like, well, the Suns were the bigger threat already this year. And this guy looked at me like he was horrified I said this.
And they won two games.
It's demonstrably... It's elementary. Right. I mean, one was 6 games, one was 4.
Yeah.
So let's just keep that clear. All right, speaking of the Suns. Go ahead, Bob.
It's all good. I just wanted to set up. I think it sets up the Suns conversation a little bit, because it's been something I've been talking about a lot here in Vegas with people. I think there's one team in the West that I feel I can lock into a playoff spot next season, and that's Denver, because Jokic never gets hurt, and they're going to be really good. But I think if you go from 2 down to 11, just in order, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Wolves, the Pelicans, the Thunder, and the Mavs, I think you can make a case for all those teams to finish in the top 6, obviously some higher in it than others. And I think you could make a case with injuries or age or whatever for all those teams that they're fighting for a play-in spot or finish in 11th.
Hold on, like, I got a call from the 801. Yeah. Salt Lake City. What? Oh, you be competitive this year?
I don't think Utah is going to be in.
I got a call from 713. Hello, Houston. Fred Van Vliet. Awesome. Awesome. Yes, absolutely. Jeff Green. Going to bring in the ring. Yep. Okay. Sorry, potting.
Dylan Brooks, worth every dime. Oh,
I just
a bunch of dimes.
That has been a big topic of discussion here, is how competitive from a depth standpoint the West is. And there are going to be 2 or 3 really good to really good teams that don't make the playoffs. And there's going to be 5 teams that are good to really good teams that aren't in the top 6. So, like, the depth across the West, and you could even, we're going to talk about it later, when you just look at the groups for the in-season tournament, The bottom of the East groups, like, yeah, I don't know, not a lot of great stuff there. Look at the bottom of these West groups. There's a lot of depth across the conference that's going to make the playoff push pretty interesting next season.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. All right. I had a piece published on Thursday on ESPN.com about the Phoenix Suns. I had an opportunity to talk to Matt Ishbia, their new owner. Still new. He's only been on the job less than 6 months. Talked to James Jones, team president. Talked to Josh Bartlestein, team CEO, about their offseason moves. And I'm just going to say that when I met Matt Ishbia, one of the times I went to Phoenix, actually it was the alleged first game for Kevin Durant where he had that freak ankle sprain. Yeah. Where we were sitting there eating the pregame meal and somebody from the Suns walked in and said, "Hey, Durant's inactive." And we went, "No, Durant's inactive." I met Matt that night and I said to him, "You know, this is just crazy. You doing this Kevin Durant trade the first day you had on the job." I go, you could own the team for 20 years and never have a trade or a decision or something like to do like that. I go, it's nothing like nothing I've ever seen. And he kind of looked at me like funny. He was like, we're going to do a lot of big deals. You know, he just sort of said it matter of factly, but like he rejected my premise that his biggest move was going to be on his first day. And the Bradley Beal trade was not as big as the Durant trade, just to be clear. Although it was a different type of trade because they had to, I wrote about the meeting that they had with him and with Bradley and his wife at a hotel suite in New York on Father's Day weekend. Cause they had to, before they could do the deal, they had to get Brad to say, I'll waive my no trade clause. But the thing that Matt made extraordinarily clear in this story where he's on the record, and let me just say, it's not often that team owners go on the record exclusively and talk about moves like this. And, you know, and he basically is like, yeah, we're doing these deals because I want to do big deals. I want to do big things and we're going to win. And yeah, we traded away draft picks, but we're going to figure it out. And I was like, okay, like there's no doubt about that. And I'll say the Suns were established in 1968. So they've been around for 55 years. What transactions were bigger than the Durant and the Bradley Beal transactions in 55 years? The Barkley trade, the Nash.
I was going to say it's an extremely short list that you even come up in the conversation. And you know, the headline quote that Matt with one T gave you, and it's one T for flopping. His flopping denial. We'll discuss that in a little bit. One, they've got to start the season off with a technical foul for that flop. Okay, he can't flop anymore.
It was a technical foul. It was on Jokic.
I know. Retroactively, they should start the season with whoever their opener is. They get a technical free throw. But regardless of that, you know, we're going to win at everything we do. And hey, hell of a philosophy, quite a goal. Not realistic. Like, that's not the way things
work. It's not quite light years ahead, but it's in the same genre.
Because like, you're going to win at everything you do. Okay. But at a certain point, you're going to run out of options. And like that point is pretty close to now, But what they have is a legitimate window here. And hey, he got the Durant deal done. You know, the Beal pitch worked. So they've got arguably the best star trio in the NBA. Give him and James Jones and Josh Bartlestein and, you know, according to some people, Isaiah Thomas credit for filling out that roster with a legitimate supporting cast, winning recruiting battles for coveted minimums is kind of an oxymoron. But these are guys who, you know, had, as you pointed out in the story, they had options and they filled out to where I think they do have a decent rotation. I still think they've got a DeAndre Ayton situation that needs to be resolved. I think it would be awfully dicey to have him on the roster come training camp for a variety of reasons, primarily related to chemistry. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out. When you've got three stars, decent supporting cast, like, I do think, Bontemps, you can pencil in the Phoenix Suns as a playoff team. I disagree with your premise of 2 through 11. You don't know, like, the Suns will be a playoff team.
I mean, let's see if their guys all play 65 or 70 games or if they play 45 or 50 games. History has shown they're all going to play 45 or 50 games, and if they do that, they're going to be in the play-in mix. Like, that's all. I'm not saying they're going to miss the playoffs.
Games out of those three guys, they'll be a playoff team.
I mean, I probably, because 8 of the 11 are going to make it. I wouldn't say it's 100%. That's all. I'm not saying the Suns are going to miss the playoffs, but, like, there are a lot of really good teams. Nobody was saying the Mavericks are going to miss the playoffs last summer. You know, they finished 11th. Like, there's just, for all these teams, for different reasons, they're all flawed. And I, like, again, it's easy to say if they all play 150 games combined, they're going to make the playoffs. But that's a lot of minutes that you're rolling out there with guys that, yes, if they're the fourth or fifth guys on the court, you feel pretty good. If they're the first or second guys on the court, you're not feeling as good. So, I mean, I think the Suns will be in the playoffs too, but it more speaks to me to just the depth of talent across the West, and there's just going to be very few nights where you're going to have an easy matchup in the Western Conference. And teams like Minnesota and Oklahoma City and Dallas that weren't in the top eight last year are going to be really good. And even a team like Utah that I don't think has much of a chance of even being in the play-in mix, like we saw last year, you play them on any given night, they're going to be a hard team to play. That was more the point than trying to take a shot at Phoenix or the Lakers or somebody. Those teams just have some downside risk where if they have some injuries, it's going to be easy to lose a few games, and all of a sudden you're in a tighter spot than you expect.
Well, that's the point of getting three, the superstar redundancy. Mm-hmm. So yep, you're protected. You are correct. If all three of them suffer injuries that knock them out for big chunks, they're in trouble. I would say that you would say that for any team that would suffer losses to their top.
Well, the difference is their guys always get hurt. That's the, you could say that about any team, but like these guys have a track record of missing significant time. That's why it's more relevant for them. It's not like the Heatles when those guys were all in their primes and healthy and played all the time. Like, you know, these guys, it's like the Clippers. You just have to assume Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are going to miss 20 to 30 games because they miss 20 to 30 games every year. And that's the Suns at this point, until we see those guys play 70 games, you have to just assume they're going to play 55 or less.
Yeah, well, let me just say that, I mean, I did a lot of talking to the Suns, you know, inside the Suns and outside the Suns before I wrote this story. I spent days and days and days on the phone. And, you know, there is something to be said for, you want your team to go get the best players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you know, if you see fans and they say, okay, now, you know, now you got Durant, now go get someone else, because they've seen teams acquire multiple players and he is doing it. Like, it is a school of thought. It may not end up being a school of thought that's productive, but he's doing it. And the reason he did this interview is I think he wanted people to know, like, this is his call. This is his, he led the meeting on Beal. he did part of the negotiations with Joe Tsai to get Durant. It's on him. And, you know, I talked to James Jones about it. I was like, look, how do you feel about this? You built a team that reached the finals. Mm-hmm. The team had to trade, which was Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. You know, you brought those guys in. You found them. You drafted them. The picks, those were what you built the finals team without trading your first round picks into the future. You had those things. And he was like, look, we were in limbo for so long. And, you know, the things that, you know, that James won't talk about is the trades that they could have made maybe a year ago, but Robert Sarver was sort of stuck with where he was at. Potential spending of money. I'm not saying necessarily in free agency, but what they could have done in other ways. He was like, we were in limbo. He goes, mm-hmm. Matt came in and said, this is going to be the direction of our franchise, and we're going to pour all of our resources into it, and we're going to do it. And so they have basically executed the vision of the owner. The owner came in and said, get me star players. Get me them right now. I don't care about our 2027 first-round pick. I don't care if we have to swap picks in 2028. Get me star players and get them to me now. And James Jones went out there and helped make it happen. And so that's the mandate. And I'm not taking a position on it because I do think it is a little bit more risky for my taste. But I get why, if you're a Suns fan, especially a Suns fan for a long time, who watched them just be absolutely irrelevant for a decade, I can understand why you love the fact this guy is doing this, especially, you know, again, when you watch Sarver pass up on the opportunity to maybe maximize what those teams could have been in that window.
Yeah, look. Next two or three years in Phoenix have a chance to be really, really fun. They are on the short list of teams that if things break right, they're going to have a legitimate chance to win a championship. But I'm just saying that it is a short window. 2027, it could be pretty painful there. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to extend the window. But that was the case, like when they went all in on Kevin Durant and gave up what they gave up for Kevin Durant, which, by the way, immediately turned the Nets into a team that has a chance to make another big splash trade, despite the fact they don't control any of their own draft capital. When they made that move, it was that window was opened and is essentially defined, and then the Beal thing is just doubling down on it. But like the idea of, hey, they're going to be able to, you know, pull off magic tricks and continue to operate like that without a not just a dip, but like a roller coaster type of thing. I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, look, they had to give up two future first round swaps to save money because they've spent so much money and to get three second round picks because they traded all their second round picks. Right. Like they are. You know, since Ishbia is in the mortgage business, they are leveraged to the hilt. And
they are
look, they've never won a title. They've had a ton of success as a franchise. It's one thing they've never done. And yeah, maybe this will work out. And if it does, as Brian has very eloquently said a bunch of times, it means that they'll never have to say they're sorry. They'll have their championship. They could have all the parades and it'll be great. But this is a extraordinarily high risk. Mm-hmm. High reward strategy, and there's a lot of downside to it, particularly because all these guys just I'm interested about the fit, I'm interested about their defense, and I'm interested about their health. And yeah, if they all are healthy and play a ton of games, it could work out great. But the West is going to be really tough, and it's going to be really fun and interesting to see how this thing looks. And like we've talked about a bunch, is Bradley Beal going to go back to being the guy who was an all-NBA caliber guard, or is he going to be the guy who was the past couple of years who was a top 40-ish player in the league?
Well,
I think that's a pretty huge question too.
Well, another way to look at it is, will Bradley Beal be the best, third best player in the NBA? And I think even if he's a top 40-ish type of guy, there's a pretty good chance of that, because they don't necessarily it's not, hey, we need Bradley Beal to come in here and score 30 points. It's we need Bradley Beal to come in here and play off of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. I think a big reason they didn't really have a chance against the Nuggets, obviously Chris Paul got hurt, but that happens, is just because there was too much on Durant's plate. At that age, 34 years old, not only to have the workload in terms of minutes, but in terms of usage, like you just cannot expect his efficiency to be at his extremely high normal levels. And, you know, with a, by his standards, pretty inefficient Kevin Durant, they didn't have a chance to keep up with the Nuggets. And in the games that they won, those two games, like Devin Booker was historically prolific and efficient. KD was put up a lot of points in both. One was pretty inefficient. One was really good. But now they've at least got another guy who, you know, that can chip in on that. Beal doesn't need to be a superstar. Doesn't need to be an all-star. If he's just very good, he's the number three guy there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's got to be better than that, but we'll agree to disagree.
Well, one of the things about when you hear Matt Ishbia is that the dominant voice in this story, when he talks, is that one of the things I've watched do owners and in the time I've covered the league, I think 15 or 16 teams have changed hands. Another handful have different governors where the owner either passed away or just stepped aside. But like 15 or 16 teams since I've been covering the league have sold. And one of the things that I've watched be a thing with owners coming in is that even though they are very intelligent, most of them, if not all of them, are self-made, and they certainly understand strategy and philosophy and aggression. But one of the things that I think is a hard thing for them to sort of calculate is the zero-sum nature of the NBA. What I mean by that is there is only so many wins available. There is only so many teams that can declare a season victory. Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cavs, and Matt Ishbia, owner of the Suns, are major business rivals. They operate and compete every day in Detroit as national mortgage companies. They steal people from each other. They backstab each other. There's probably espionage and you know, corporate stuff going on. Who knows what gets said? I don't even try to imagine. And at the end of the day, they're both fabulously wealthy billionaires. Right. I mean, maybe Ishbia 1 year has a better year and pulls ahead, and maybe another year Gilbert has a better year and they pull ahead, whatever. But at the end of it, they're still both filthy rich. And even though the guys who sit in the women who sit together in the rooms and do the NBA, even though in some cases they are business partners, in some cases they're business adversaries, they're all in that room. It all works. They can all 30 of them have a great financial year. They can't all have a good business year. Mm-hmm. For every team that rises, another team must fall. David Stern used to preach this, you know, there's a finite amount of wins, and that nature where a team can actually do a bunch of things correct. You can make the correct aggression. You can pick the best trades. You can make great strides in the draft, and you can still not win because there is only so many available. And that, you know, Ishbia has been very aggressive, like he was in building his company to where it is. Like, I'm sure, you know, and I even spoke to him about this. I'm not looking for a history of how he built his company. That's written in a different area. That's not what we do at ESPN. But I'm sure he has done moves like this. I mean, he is very audacious in his life, what he does. The audacious moves that he has made since he came over mirror the audacious moves he made to turn his company. I think his father operated this mortgage company and had like 10 employees when he brought Matt on when he graduated college. Now it's this conglomerate, right? I'm sure he made audacious moves in there, but the audacious moves for the Suns in a zero-sum game, it's harder. It's a closed system.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay, Bon Temps, you've got some trivia.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bon Temps.
We just talked a bunch about the Suns, haven't won a championship. What is the team, what is the franchise in the NBA that has the highest winning percentage without ever winning a championship?
Phoenix Suns.
It's not the Phoenix Suns. They are second.
Memphis Grizzlies.
It is not the Memphis Grizzlies. They are Thunder. Pretty far down the list.
The Thunder won one in Seattle.
The Thunder are considered part of the Sonics still, I believe.
Okay. Didn't consider that, but you are
going off. I'm going off of Stathead. They are third on my list. Or not third on my list, but they're
there's no way that the Nets have the best record.
Nope. It's not the Nets. Indiana is a decent ways down. Not them.
We suck at this. Well, hell, I'm just going from teams that have never won a championship. Magic.
It's not Orlando.
Hornets.
Definitely not the Hornets.
Cannot possibly be the Kings.
He's just guessing now. Portland? No, Portland won.
Portland is 77. Portland,
I'm
Portland
so sorry.
Has won.
I'm so sorry.
Correct.
Spirit of 77. I take
That's
it all
right.
back. I was born
Utah
in
Jazz.
What do you want from me?
It's got to be the Utah Jazz.
The Utah Jazz are the answer.
There you go.
54%.
I should have gotten that one.
54% winning percentage.
801, call it again. Hello.
Among current NBA
20
franchises,
consecutive playoff years.
Among current NBA franchises, they are fourth in winning percentage. San Antonio, Boston, the Lakers, Utah, and Phoenix are in the top five. Latter
it is remarkable. It is remarkable that Phoenix has never won a title. They have the advantages that Utah doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Listen, that's one thing. And we saw it when in the minimum market. Phoenix is going to be somewhere that guys want to play. Like, they like the weather during the season. They like, you know, the access to the golf during the season. They like the ability to make a little scoot over to Scottsdale and, you know, enjoy a little bit of a lifestyle. And then, you know,
low state like income tax too. Very low. I mean, 2%. I don't think many players are making their judgments based on income tax, but it is an advantage. It certainly used it as a weapon over the years.
Yeah. the Mavericks have attempted with the no state income tax in Texas and not quite succeeded there. But like, if you're choosing between 2% and 13%, now all else is equal, it's not a bad tiebreaker. But yeah, they'll be able to recruit there. But again, they'll be able to recruit to minimums because the handcuffs are in place. Golden handcuffs, diamond encrusted, whatever you want to call them, they're in place.
Bon Temps, you attended Adam Silver, took questions. He didn't actually hold a press conference this week after the Board of Governors meeting where they approved some expanded replay. Boy, did that make my day. Expanded replay. That's what I need is if we expand replay, we have to ban players waving their finger around. if you're going to give a technical foul for flopping in the game, I think you give a technical foul for a player standing up after, you know, getting called for a block and yelling, wave.
No. My favorite is when Luka does it and looks at J-Kidd. Jay Kidd has his hands in his pocket and acts like he's looking at the replay just so he doesn't have to make eye contact with Luka.
he's back drinking that Diet Coke on the sideline or whatever.
Just so people are aware that it isn't necessarily expanded replay. If a coach gets his first challenge correct, he wins his first challenge. He gets a second one. Though they
is that still, more replay or might do I not understand the word expand?
I'm just making it clear because in the past they've expanded replay to like cover more things. This is just you get another challenge if you win, like okay. in the NFL.
And then there's also the new flop rule. It's a technical foul, but not one that can count towards an ejection. And I actually witnessed, I thought it was the first flop. It turned out there was one in the old California Classic the night before, but I was in Salt Lake City and I forget who it was. I don't even remember what team it was, but some poor guy, I thought he got nailed in the chin and he got called for a flopping technical foul. So that's an interesting one. Like I said, the Suns should retroactively have the first official one in a game that actually matters, but we'll see what the NBA does about that.
I did ask Matt Ishbia about the Jokic play incident. He hadn't talked about it publicly.
The Ishbia
moment.
He hadn't
talked about it. I thought it was going to kind of be lighthearted because, you know, time has passed and whatever. And he swears he was fine, but like I thought he was gonna be like, yeah, I flopped. I did. I wanted it to look bad. But no, he was like, well, one thing he did say, which was fair, he's like, the whole thing happened in like 2.5 seconds. Like, you know, on the replay, it looks like I was contemplating, but that's fair. The other thing is that the ball, he didn't grab the ball. The ball bounced into his hands.
You but know, he it wasn't didn't
like
go.
He went and grabbed the ball and like held it.
He certainly wasn't giving it back, though.
He sure didn't let go.
That's true. And but he said he was just holding his hands up because he didn't want anybody to think that he was touching Jokic. You know, he didn't want to be impeding him.
And then what about this part of it? What about when the hands flew back? Oh! And he goes flying back into his seat. What about that part?
He did say that Booker and Durant individually sought him out and applauded him for earning the team a point.
Book said that in the press conference after the game.
Yeah, he was very happy about that. So make of it what you will. Anyway, Bontemps, Silver did not hold his normal question and answer session with reporters. He did have a question and answer session with the Associated Press sports editors. A bunch of sports editors from the nation have a had a convention in Vegas, and he took questions from them. You were there. I know you asked a few questions, even though you're not a sports editor and you won't be editing this podcast anytime
soon.
Damn
sure don't have management potential.
What did you take away from what he said?
My lead was on him saying that there's no plans to have sovereign wealth funds own teams in the foreseeable future. I thought that was an interesting thing. I asked him that question. I wanted to see what his response to that would be. I mean, listen, you can mock me for this, but if you've paid any attention to what's gone on with LIV Golf, you know, the sovereign wealth funds are moving into American sports. They've obviously taken over European soccer in many respects, and Adam can say what he wants. My just personal opinion is with the Qatari sovereign wealth fund now buying into Monumental Sports, which owns the Nationals and the Mystics and the Washington Capitals, or the Wizards, the Mystics and the WNBA.
They might own the Nationals before the end.
They might own the Nationals soon. Ted Leonsis has been in talks to buy them for a while. This is a topic that's going to come up, and there's going to be a day when the NBA is going to have to make a decision about one of these groups potentially buying a team and having a controlling interest in a team. What'd you say, Tim?
I said, all right, cool. I only pay attention to golf when I want to take a nap. So,
well, that's
fine.
Yeah,
we're talking about the NBA, buddy.
it's going to be, right now there's a limit. They can only own up to 5% of teams. And, you know, the NBA, you know, Silver made it very clear that they want to have individuals owning these teams and they don't want these groups having a controlling interest. But then in the next answer, he said the quiet part out loud, which is why this is going to be an issue, which is that they're running out of people who have the funds to be the individual person to buy these teams. And that with the rising valuations and the amount of money these sovereign wealth funds have, that is going to be a storyline in the years to come to watch. And so I thought it was interesting for him to say that on the record. I think the more sexy topic to talk about, which we can now get into, is he once again didn't run away from expansion being a thing and has once again laid out the timeline of when this is going to happen, which is CBA got done. That's now officially done. TV deal is going to be negotiated. It's up after the 2024-25 season, but I think it will probably be done sometime in the next 12 to 18 months is my guess. It's usually done pretty far ahead of when the next deal goes into effect. And then once that's done, expansion is going to be on the table. And he also made it fairly clear that the two places they're going to expand are here and in Seattle.
Yeah.
So I think at this point we can pretty much wipe away the idea of if this is going to happen. And it's just a matter of when on the calendar these teams are going to start. Is it going to be the 26-27 season? Is it going to be the 27-28 season? But it feels like that is going to be much more of a certainty at this point than even a year or two ago. Because at this point, they're not even hiding behind the possibility of we'll see what happens. He just keeps saying, well, it's not happening right now, but it's going to happen then.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they get their TV deal done. Then they get the expansion done. And like you said, they basically, we know where it's going to be. And not only is he not running away from expansion, like he is running full speed towards, laying the foundation for the NBA going to Las Vegas. And obviously the Las Vegas Summer League, it is crazy how much the Summer League has become an event. Like, it's not too long ago that it was very rare to see people in the upper deck at all. Now, like, there was games, it's legitimately sold out. There's all these, you know, events around it. It's you know, the that sphere thing that's going to cause a million car wrecks is a basketball promoting the Summer League. And then, look.
Owned by James Dolan's company, by the way.
Oh, all right. Where is the Final Four for Adam Silver's, you know, precious new product, the in-season tournament, going to be? Well, it's going to be in Las Vegas, of course, where we're going to have a live pod, sounds like, Wendy.
Really? I don't know about that.
No, we'll see. I think
you at do. The Sphere? At the Sphere? On the top of the Sphere?
Somewhere around there. But they're
gonna, I haven't seen any pictures of the inside of the Sphere. I'll bet the inside of the Sphere is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, but so, and there's going to have all kinds of events around that. But basically, they want their little, I'm not going to say it's not midseason, it's early season showcase
in-season.
To be in Vegas. They are doing everything.
They changed it from midseason to in season.
Right. Which it is. Yeah, it's not midseason. It's not even close to midseason.
That's
but right. It's, you know, they're trying to create as much interest in the NBA in Vegas as possible, which is smart. Given, you know, that the Raiders have been a big draw in Vegas, whatever that hockey team's called. You know, they're about to build the A's a new ballpark.
They just won the Stanley Cup.
First of all, I don't care.
The Golden Knights. Well, okay. Anyway, let me just say this. The Golden Knights and the Aces are champions. Yeah. Vegas is a city of champions. Good luck to the Raiders.
And
good luck to the A's. I can already tell you that there are multiple groups that are preparing to try to buy this expansion team in Las Vegas that I know about, much less what I don't know about. And so LeBron is also not very veiled, indicated that he would like to be a part of the franchise in Vegas. And I could argue that LeBron James has made the NBA tens of billions of dollars. I don't even know if you could quantify his worth to the NBA. And, you know, if anybody other than Michael Jordan has earned an opportunity to get a team, it would be LeBron. But let me just say, even though we're years away from finding out, the thing that I'm already wondering is there's already an arena being built, in the process of being built on south of the Strip, that is probably going to be the home of this team, because they already know this is what's going to happen. If this is going to be a bidding war, or if they're going to just select somebody, if they're going to say, okay, the price is $6 billion, I'm just guessing. If the price is some billion, and then there's like four bidders, and then they select a bidder, or if they're just going to auction it off, and it's just going to go high, because my speculation is they'll auction it off. I don't know, but I think it could get wild. The other thing is, in the new CBA, the players did get something else added to what they split with the owners. They added, they got some marketing funds that grew their pot. And that was, it looks to me from the outside like that was a horse trade, that they gave them that to add to their pie, but didn't give them splitting the possible expansion revenue, because expansion revenue is not indicated in, is basketball related income. So, you know, if a team sells for $3 billion, you know, an expansion team comes in for $3 billion, each of the teams gets 100 right. million. Here you go. Easy math. It won't be 3 billion. It'll be way higher than that, but they don't have to share with the players. It's just, they take the check. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. And the reason that's, you know, they also have to share the national TV money with them. It becomes a split, a 1 out of 30 to 1 out of 32. And so that's the math on that. But it will be interesting to see what I suspect is going to be a, not only a bidding war, but an influence war. We know that it looks like LeBron is lining up to represent somebody. Mm-hmm. Who else is going to be there trying to win over the vote that will take place eventually, whatever it is, 2025, 2026. It's already happening behind the scenes. Trust me. So, all right, we got to go. Thank you to Mr. Bontemps. Thank you to Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. I am taking some time off coming up. As soon as Joe Cronin said months and months for Dame Lillard, I was like, oh, that sounds like time off. But the pod will be still be going on, but it'll be a little less frequent. I'm sure nobody's upset about that. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.